From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, a conversation with Peter Lavelle, the host of RT's flagship program Crosstalk, about Mueller, the great divide in American politics that apparently has been caused by the Russians, and a lot more. We spoke with him via Skype from Moscow on Wednesday. Peter, it's been too long. It's good to have you on with us.
It's great to be back with you, Doc.
As we speak on Wednesday, today's the 24th, Mr. Mueller is a talking head on C-SPAN. And I haven't seen it, but we're 3, 4, 5 minutes into it. What was your quick summary of it?
Well, they went through all the procedures to start it, so that was pro forma. Right. And then Mueller read his introductory statement. And within 3 minutes of his statement, he said that he will not react to questions about the origins of what you and I know are the Russiagate hoax, and he won't speak to the Steele dossier. That's all you need to know, folks. Turn it off. It's just a waste of time.
Who said how to do it and why? And with this dossier that came up from offshore, by the way, from a foreign power that apparently was hired out by Hillary Clinton and or Mark Rubio, different phases of its life. What role did that play in this whole affair? And I'm not talking about that stuff.
Central to everything. Yeah. I mean, the use of these FISA warrants were based on the dossier. That's so if you don't want to talk about the origins of the dossier, then you're not going to speak about the FISAs. Right. Also, one other point that he made, in the last point he made in his introductory remarks, which is very, very important, again, continuing to underline the false assumption that Russia grossly meddled in the 2016 election. There's no evidence of that. It's never been presented. Oh, that's right. He never talked to Julian Assange, did he?
Right.
You know, I mean, such gaping holes in this whole thing. This is so utterly ridiculous. The reason why Mueller has agreed to this hearing, he didn't really have to. He could have just walked away from it. But just his last few statements of his introductory remarks is the whole point, is to keep this ridiculous hoax alive all the way to the election. All right.
Yeah.
And that's the purpose of it. Yeah. I've always said the purpose of Russiagate is Russiagate itself. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Because they knew, I mean, Peter Strzok and his girlfriend, they in their exchanges, they said there's no there. They knew it, and they were at the very beginning of the Russiagate hoax. I mean, there's a remarkable amount of evidence that they were actually behind it, generating this hoax.
Right.
Okay,
right.
So you know, that's what Mueller has done. Okay, he's come in and he's thrown a life raft to the Democrats and to the liberal media that are so white, red-faced over all of this, just to keep it alive. The purpose of Russiagate is Russiagate itself.
You know, there's some really weird stuff going on, not even at the periphery, but at various points, location points inside this whole McGill Russiagate. Just to leave you scratching your head. The article, Margaret Kimberly's weekly article at blackagendareport.com this week under Freedom Rider column, talks about Kamala Harris, who says basically that the whole bend the knee thing protest against black people being shot to death in the United States, really, which is hugely supported by a vast section of the population, actually, certainly Democrats. Black folks, huge supporters of it. Just about anyone working class of any color, huge supporters of it. Yet, the reason Kamala Harris says it happened is because of Russian bots, that Russia took this non-thing and threw it to divide the nice, kindly people of the United States in half, and that's what this is.
Well, you know, it really takes a lot of guile for a woman of color, Senator Harris, to basically say black people have no agency. I mean, okay, you know, still another insult from the establishment, from right. privileged people. And I'm not looking at color. I'm looking at people that have power. Okay. Right. And Kamala Harris had a lot of power. How many black people did she put behind bars? Mm-hmm. How many parents were threatened because their children were truant? I mean, Kamala Harris is really wants to pivot away from her very heavy-handed, even semi-authoritarian touch when it comes to the law. So, I mean, I think, and I'm not going to go into detail here, but we kind of know how she climbed the rungs of power in California. We will leave it at that.
Prosecutor, yeah. Another hard-ass prosecutor, basically. You know, tough guy prosecutor. That's a public image.
Well, I mean, you know, I remember one of the first things I learned when I was in finance, because I came from academia into finance. So that was a big change. And my boss told me on day one, he says, it doesn't have to be right. It has to be consistent. And I would say that.
Right.
The senator from California.
Right. So, all right. So you have like that. They blame that on the Russians.
It's really convenient. You know, it's really interesting because my team, my crosstalk team, all of the wonderful, talented young women that work with me, they have all traveled to the West. Right. They know a lot about the West. And remarkably, they come up with what would probably surprise a lot of our viewers, listeners right now, is that they know far more about the West than the West knows about them. And again, yeah. I mentioned the lack of agency. You know, Russians don't have any agency, apparently. Well, yes, they do.
Right.
A
right.
very sophisticated society, culturally rich, and moving in the right direction for the most part. And there's such a lack of recognition of that. All right. I mean, again, you know, there was that big there was a big discussion when I think it was Putin was speaking with the FT, and he in a very small, you know, maybe it would be a couple hundred words maximum. You know, he talked about the failure of neoliberalism, and I read it and I said, yeah, but look what kind of, you know, storm it created. No, because the elites cannot admit that what they've pursued for particularly in the last 40 years has worked for them. It hasn't worked for the rest of us.
Right.
And they have to defend that. They have to defend what they've done in their for their own interests, their own very physical and financial, even quote unquote, and I say this in inverted commas, intellectual self-esteem, okay? But, you know, the system isn't working for the average person. And that's why we're getting Brexit. That's why Trump was elected. And then we have this new European Commission president, this Ursula von der Leyen. I mean, I read her just before we started here. I read her manifesto and said, she's oblivious to what people in the European Union are thinking about.
Right.
Just the complete opposite.
Well, she didn't have to run for office.
Again, it's just condescension. It's, you know, looking down at people. And, you know, and democracy is just a facade for these people. No, it's a ritual they go through all across the Western world to legitimize and perpetuate their power.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. You know, one of the things that... It's kind of bedeviling, really. You have the society divided in terms of the narrative, like, you know, face to face, screaming with race and racism and sexism at the heart of the narrative. Okay, Russians did it, of course, but. You know, you're racist. Everybody that thinks this is a racist, everyone that does that is a racist. You're misogynist. Anyone that thinks that, you know, you're doing this, you're a misogynist, you're homophobic, whatever. Two pretty evenly balanced in terms of population numbers, camps that are on opposite sides of narratives dealing with social and political issues. But... not in a way that is intended to actually address
exactly.
or solve those things, but rather to maintain a tension to perpetuate them. So well, that you have this political tension and, you know, constant, you know, feature of the system.
Yeah, and that's what I call voluntary authoritarianism. This is what's happening, and you use the key word narrative. These are narratives where you're forced to choose between two, a binary choice, and which I think is absolutely false. But we're all pushed in that direction, and both have authoritarian tendencies on the left and on the right.
Well,
And I think it's very, very dangerous because you can't resolve that. It is made to be unresolvable. This is intentional.
You know, it's like, whose binary is it, by the way? Who establishes the two poles and the location of them? You know, they've redefined left and redefined right, just like, you know, by fiat from Atlanta, CNN headquarters or something, I don't know, over the last 20 years, 25, 30 years, to now it's completely unrecognizable to anyone who was familiar with the term, say, in 1965 or 1975.
In 1985.
Yeah, that's right, really. Yep, and even 1995, although it gets real murky then. When Clinton got elected.
Then it starts to really change because you have somebody like Bill Clinton that just pollutes the political vocabulary. It started with him. Who does this benefit? It benefits the elites.
Right.
Get everybody at their throats. And then if you do that, then you don't consider what is fair when it comes to healthcare, what is fair when it comes to education, what is fair about immigration. Now, I'm a conservative. Everybody knows that. But I am more than willing to talk to my counterparts on the other side of the divide on a case-by-case, policy-by-policy process, okay? But no, you can't talk to them because they're this, and this. I won't play into that. You saw my crosstalk that I did on Is Everything Racism? I mean, I was very friendly. I was engaging. I disagreed when I think it's important to disagree, and I stopped talking and listened when I thought it was important. That's how we should conduct our public discourse. But people on both sides of this artificial divide say that you can't do that. And unfortunately, we have Trump in the middle of it all. Everybody allows Trump to run the narrative, and that is a terrible mistake. It's good for clicks, it's good for advertising, it's bad for society, and it's bad for our body politic.
Well, yeah, yes, he runs the narrative, but an awful lot of the initiative is his only because it's him that's there. In other words, a lot of the actual initiative is the targeting of Trump. It seems like the media wake up every morning with, you know, a fill-in-the-blanks narrative. Trump, you know, sucks today because... And then they run down
the list. Blank. Yeah.
You know, that's on CNN and MSNBC. I, you know, wait every morning to see what that is. And then on Fox, you know, they're calling, like, I don't know, like John Bircher's the left, you know, or whatever. They have so muddied up the ideological terrain that used to be discussed on TV.
Yeah, like, they should go back where they came from. I'm paraphrasing Trump here. I strongly disagree with that. That is completely unnecessary rhetoric. The women he's talking about are American citizens, if you agree with them or not. All right? So that was going over the line. It was wrong. Now, what was equally wrong, if not worse, actually, is watching people on Fox trip over themselves trying to explain what Trump said. I felt embarrassed for Fox. Mm. All right. They should have just said, wow, you shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
And that's when people will start believing the media again. All right.
Yeah,
instead of just running cover all of the time, with the exception of Tucker Carlson, which I think is turning into the conscience of America. That's all my own personal opinion.
Yeah. You know, I think I've mentioned to you before, he does have the distinction of being the only American TV host to ever have me on.
Well, and you know, Don, he has all stripes of political thinking of the time. He's the only, he stands alone in doing that. If you agree with his tactics, you agree with his ideology. I mean, you know, I'm trying to remember, Richard Goodstein is on there a lot. He's on Crosstalk as well.
Yep.
Jason Nichols, the professor, the African-American professor in Washington, D.C. Yep. He's been on Crosstalk a number of times. And he's paid me a wonderful compliment, and so has Richard as well, is that only on Crosstalk and on Tucker where you can actually have a real discussion.
Yeah, actually, I was on Crosstalk with Richard.
We had
both on together.
Look, he's a crafty guy. He's crafty. He's good at what he does. I completely disagree with him.
Yep.
But he's good at what he does. And I don't think he's a bad person, okay? I called him, before the recording, I called him the Battleship Galactica of the Democratic Party. He loved that term, okay? Because he's a big guy.
And he
speaks for the party, and you can tell that he gets a little uncomfortable under the collar because somebody in his party has said or done something, but he navigates it. That's what he's supposed to do. Yeah, that's his job.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Yeah, I would say, the ungenerous term for that is a Democratic Party hack, just like they have Republican Party hacks and other party hacks.
We should rehabilitate the term hack.
Exactly. I'm using it in the classic sense. And not,
you and I are hacks too. Okay. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. I'm not speaking. Nice. I'm not saying it to be in a derogatory way, other than the derogatory politics that the term carries. That unfortunately, that's the retail politics of the United States. So if you're going to engage in it, then that's what you're doing one way or another, or you're not engaged.
But the difference is that I come out, I show the stripes on my sleeves. Okay.
Yeah, right.
I don't make any kind of claims of being neutral. Because I think people that do that are disingenuous people particularly on CNN, they are the worst, because at MSNBC, they say what they're left progressive. That's how they advertise themselves. And that's fine. Rachel Maddow makes a ton of money by spinning her agenda. Okay. And she has a modicum of success. I mean, she's kind of dropped in the ratings because of the Russia hoax has ebbed. I can tolerate her more than I can like Don Lemon or Chris Cuomo.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I have the same problem.
I have a problem.
So, watching this situation from Moscow, from you being an American, somebody that grew up here, you get to talk to people because of your job, that are still here, and you're surrounded by a class of people that are international, that are also doing that. They're talking to people every day around the world. So it's different from the average American's perspective by a long shot. But what does it look like to you when you see a rehashing yet again today of Mueller's report and... The whole shaping up of the election and the refusal by the Democratic Party to put this down and start campaigning on the kind of issues that are going to win or lose.
Yeah, the people that talk about all of this on cable and, the New York Times and the Washington Post, I mean, from my estimation, none of them really know anything about Russia, at all,
Right.
It's all just grotesque stereotypes. And, one way I kind of unwind is I watch TV serials on Netflix, every single reference to a Russian is a negative. Every single reference to Russia is negative. And because China has so much money now in the U.S. economy and in the entertainment industry, they avoid criticizing China, but they would never avoid criticizing Russia, would they? In my circle, in my extended circle, looking at Russiagate, it's just kind of more pathetic than anything else. It's pathetic because everyone knows here that the claims that Russia was trying to favor one candidate or another is ridiculous because the Russian political establishment doesn't trust any American politician. You had George W. Bush withdraw from the ABM treaty. Okay. You had Barack Obama's administration start sanctions against Russia because of Crimea. I mean, it doesn't matter what political party is in power. It doesn't matter who's president. I mean, they will be guarded no matter what. They have to be. I mean, It's American troops on Russia's borders. It's not Russian troops on American borders. And that's how people look at it here. I mean, again, this kind of, you know, here's this country that claims to be the beacon of freedom, to be most powerful, to be the greatest, the most superlative, and a bunch of kids from St. Petersburg with clickbait and bought Facebook book ads after the election, influenced the election. I mean, it just, people just don't take it seriously here. I mean, I don't know, maybe something will come out of this hearing. It's going on as we speak right now. Maybe something will come out that might surprise someone, but I doubt it. I mean, it's not a non-starter. It's not about Russia. It's about the internal political dynamics and turmoil of the United States. It has nothing to do with Russia. It's a, Russia is the epiphenomenon.
I get nervous over the fact that it was Russia that was chosen to be the subject matter of this giant, you know, PR creature that was set loose upon the electorate, upon the people of the world after the, or during and after the 2016 election. In other words, a different enemy that didn't have nuclear weapons. You know, wherever that seems to go, you know, I mean, we've seen this whole program go down enough times. Uh-oh, there's the axis of evil over there. There's the new Hitler of the moment over there. You better not do that or else. Oops, they did it. Ba-blam, ba-blam, ba-blam. You know, we've seen this play over and over again. And when they start doing that and pointing towards Russia, they choose Russia as the object of that narrative. It makes me nervous because after the ba-blam, 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 I'll hear like a white noise and then there'll be a vapor because Russia fights back. Russia has the weaponry, the tools to fight back in a way that would put my life at serious risk here in New York, for example.
Me in Moscow.
Yeah. And so, I'm kind of rambling a little bit around this point. The point being, the choice of target, choosing Russia to do that, this happened at the same time that the U.S. was aggressively moving against Russia, you know, taking down the Ukrainian, elected Ukrainian government, trying to spin border countries, and including rump Ukraine, into NATO, deploying troops and material and everything to Russia's borders. If you'll recall, I think they've stopped doing it, but they were wargaming on a regular basis, and some of the war games, you know, running from like the Baltics to the Korean Peninsula. You know, when that's happening with this other public narrative, it made me very, very nervous, and it makes me wonder, you know, did they choose this narrative, you know, as a part of a whole? Is there, is somebody's intent?
The thing is that obviously there's always the possibility of miscalculation and a mistake.
That too.
That could start something. However, the whole design of this is the necessity of a threat. So saying Pakistan is a threat, well, not really. What, Brazil? No, well, they're in the Western Hemisphere. I mean, Russia's the perfect one. It's the perfect one because, first of all, there's a long history of Russophobia in the West. The most Russophobic country in the West is Great Britain, and remain so. I mean, it was Theresa May's parting shot.
Right.
I mean, tell you how pathetic it is. Her last day, and she had to blame it on Russia because she screwed up Brexit. But, you know, Russia is a convenient target because it's historical. I mean, I've had guests on my program, and I must say they are, they're pensioners. I think that would be a proper word. And they sometimes accidentally say the Soviet Union. They say the Politburo, and then they have to correct themselves. Right. Okay. There's that longstanding perception of Russia, a very distorted one, right. I have to tell you. Because it can defend itself. I mean, it is a legitimate quote unquote target. And it quote unquote is a existential threat to the United States because it's the only country in the world that could actually devastate the United States. So right. It's very convenient. But if you know, Trump signed that omnibus a budget again. I mean, whatever happened to fiscal restraint? I mean, as a conservative, I'm just disgusted by it, okay? And that's why I keep talking about the elites. It's there. They want us to play these political games, these cultural wars. It's a pivot away from what's really happening, bankrupting the country, making the hardworking middle-class people pay for it, and not being held responsible for their policies, okay? And so Russia is a very its importance is because it's defined and perceived as a threat. Nobody in the Pentagon wants to go to war with Russia, believe me.
Nobody in the Pentagon, for sure. I'm convinced of that, too.
If John Bolton had his way, you know, Pompeo, these fools, right. Trump has walked away from the Rubicon, but, you know, yeah. I remember, you know, the last, he had 10 minutes and he called it all off. I don't believe that story at all. Right. I think it's a fake story. But I blame Trump for painting himself into a corner. He's been very foolish.
Well, he almost got painted.
To let these guys paint him into a corner.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's like an arsonist saying, well, I didn't light the match. Well, right. Okay, great, but you're still an arsonist, okay? Yeah. So that is a very tragic thing here. And look at Pompeo and look at Bolton. I mean, these people are interested in power. They're not interested in politics in a normative sense, okay? And then Rudy Giuliani, this sucking up and getting into bed with the MEK, this cult terrorist group that is the government in waiting once there's some, if they overthrow the government of Iran. I mean, this government in waiting, they're waiting in Albania, of
right.
all places.
I know, okay? Right, yep.
What the hell is that all about?
I know. Well, Tehran, maybe they're confused a little. the road signs confuse them.
That's, you know, I worry about the Iranian situation, and you know, it was very, very interesting. The law of unintended consequences is so amazing; it continues to surprise me. So, you know, an Iranian tanker is pirated by the UK, and then the Iranians return the favor and take a British a tanker. You know what Britain has done to itself? It's insignia, the red flag with the Union Jack, their maritime flag.
Right.
Now, they're very proud of that, hundreds of years. Okay, this was the most prestigious flag on the seven seas, right? Well, now people don't want to use it.
Right.
So they go, I don't want That's your right. flag.
It's
the
a target.
Flag that was supposed to be the most dignified on the seas.
Right.
You know, and in one incident, now you have tankers saying, I'm not going to fly it. Because yeah. it's an inconvenient flag right now, not a flag of convenience, to use the lingo. Okay. So in one event, you've taken hundreds of years of this reputational symbol and you've trashed it because we want to do the Trump administration a favor? Really?
Yeah, in business, you know, they call that goodwill, and there's some real value in it, you know, that can be measured by accountants and such. Ask Trump about that. He licenses his name. And now, like in one fell swoop, it's like painting a target on your boats instead of, you
exactly.
know, an aura of protection.
Does anybody think about these things? Doesn't anyone think about the consequences of their actions? Mm-hmm. See, this is what it's my whole take on all of this is that the unipolar moment has ended clearly ended. It came into being after the end of the Cold War. What is coming into being is very unclear, and we're in this in-between time. And you see the U.S. and you see the U.K., particularly U.K., because it's shrunk in power and influence so much. They're panicking. They're not thinking straight. They're not thinking rationally.
Right.
And right. And you know, you have these rising powers, or the return of China, the return of Russia, the rise of Iranian influence in the Middle East, which is real. Why? Because of every single screw up by the West over the last 100 years in the Middle East.
Yep.
I mean, just look at it. I mean, Iran just standing still, treading water, has seen its influence expand immensely because, well, it broke up Iraq, didn't it?
And practically handed it over. Peter, we got to stop here. I appreciate your time. See you again, and keep on cross-talking.
And I'll see you on cross-talking.
Yes.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.